I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. This weekend, violence coursed through a Walmart in El Paso, Texas, an entertainment district in Dayton, Ohio, and at an apartment complex on Baltimore's west side. President Trump waited until a couple of hours ago to address the violence, making brief remarks at the White House and suggesting in a tweet that background checks for gun purchases be married to immigration reform. Whether it's caused by domestic terrorism or criminality, the trauma these shootings leave in their wake is unmistakable and far-reaching. Today on Midday, a conversation about a proposal to make Baltimore trauma-responsive. What can be done to address the long-lasting trauma that violence creates? Baltimore City Council members Zeke Cohen and Christopher Burnett, Douglas High School student Brianna Harris, and Baltimore Ceasefire co-founder Leatrice Gant join me right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. According to the nonprofit group Gun Violence Archive, this year there have been 251 shootings in the United States in which four or more people, excluding the gunman, have been shot. Walmart stores in Texas and Mississippi, an entertainment district in Dayton, Ohio, a food festival in California, a block party in Brooklyn, New York, a playground in O'Donnell Heights in South Baltimore. This past weekend was a Baltimore ceasefire weekend in which victims of violence were remembered and events were organized to promote alternatives to violence. Seven people were shot over the course of the weekend, including a 32-year-old woman who has yet to be identified by police who died from her wounds. The Child and Adolescent Health Measurement Initiative reports that well more than 50% of Baltimore's children have experienced one or more major traumatic events in their young lives. The impact of these events on the physical and mental well-being of these children is devastating. There is plenty of talk about mass shootings nationally and the murder rate here in Baltimore City, but there is far less focus on the trauma that accompanies violence for families and friends of the victims. Today, a conversation about a proposal in front of the Baltimore City Council to make our city trauma-responsive. Zeke Cohen represents District 1 on the Baltimore City Council. That district includes Canton, Bayview, Harbor East, O'Donnell Heights, and Fells Point. He is the sponsor of the bill. Councilman, good to see you, sir.
It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Councilman Christopher Burnett represents the 8th District. That's on the city's west side. Includes Edmondson Village, Forest Park, Gwynns Falls, Leakin Park, and Hunting Ridge. He joins us on the phone from City Hall. Councilman, good to talk to you, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Brianna Harris is a rising senior at Frederick Douglass High School across the street from Mondawmin Mall, also on the city's west side. She helped Councilman Cohen draft his trauma-responsive legislation. Brianna, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And good luck on senior year.
Thank you very much.
Coming right up. And Leatrice Gant is a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, joining us again after a very busy and productive weekend.
Yes, happy to be here. Thank you.
Good to see you again. Lots of good stuff happening this weekend. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about the ceasefire movement? What do you think about this trauma-responsive legislation? Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming our conversation on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Councilman Cohen, give us a summary of what this bill aims to do.
Sure. And just some context into why we introduced this legislation. So, again, you said this in the beginning of the show, Tom, but we are a city that is experiencing an inordinate amount of trauma. Like you said, over 50%, 56% of our young people in Baltimore experience either violence or housing instability or having a parent who's either incarcerated or substance use disordered, addicted to substances. And we know that the cumulative impact of that trauma is enormous over the span of a child's life. We know that if left untreated, trauma causes health problems and that it can lead to increased likelihood of all of the types of behaviors that we do not want to see any more of in our city. And yet, too often in Baltimore, we've responded to our problems by trying to police them away without taking a preventive lens or a public health lens to the work that we need to do in this city. And so I was inspired, actually, we held a hearing, and I was inspired by Brianna and her classmates from Frederick Douglass High School, who were there when there was a shooting in the school, and who spoke to us not just about the impact of that shooting, but also the impact of growing up in West Baltimore and experiencing all these things and not having a city that supports their health and well-being. And I was really moved by their testimony. And so we created the Trauma Responsive Care Act, which is a law that really transforms Baltimore City government into being trauma responsive. And what that actually looks like is, one, our frontline staff, whether in Rec and Park, libraries, housing, even our parking inspectors will be trained in being trauma-informed and trauma-responsive with our health department. Two is that it creates a trauma-responsive work group led by community, council members, the Mayor's Office of Children and Family Success, with the goal of preventing and reducing trauma across the city of Baltimore. And then third and finally, and really importantly, this bill calls on each city agency to select two trauma-responsive champions who will meet together as a group, who will receive advanced training, and then who will go back into our city agencies and rewrite our policies and procedures with a lens toward reducing harm. So for example, when I go to a rec center, and even though we have some of the best rec staff in America, too often I see young people who are experiencing conflict or trauma being yelled at, sometimes being put out of the rec center. We know that that actually inadvertently re-traumatizes our kids. And so that's the type of policy decision that we need to change in this city. And that's what I hope this legislation begins to accomplish.
And Councilman Burnett, you are the chair of the Health Committee on the Baltimore City Council. And it's interesting that this legislation is going to go to your committee first. When do you expect to vote out of committee on this piece of legislation?
So I think we have to move fast. You know, obviously, any committee hearing, we want to get as much feedback and testimony from the public as possible and from experts in the field. And so I think we'll have a very robust discussion. But my intention is to try and move this bill through the council as quickly as we can. You know, we've struggled way too long with violence in Baltimore. And to second the Councilman Cohen's point about the focus on policing as the only solution to resolve this issue that has crippled neighborhoods and families for too long in Baltimore, we have to change the tide, and we have to move in a different direction. And one, we know that there are a large number of young people who are exposed to violence at an early age, and that trauma impacts them for the rest of their lives. And we know that it actually has a physiological response on brain development moving, you know, as they move through their lives. And so time is of the essence. I don't intend to sit on this very long. I think we definitely need more trauma-informed practices in Baltimore. This is something that we've talked about on this council for some time now. You know, back in 2017, we put together the Live to Be More plan and the Public Safety Committee, and this, you know, idea of using trauma response and trying to bring that directly to young people, something that we've all, Councilman Cohen, President Scott, and all of us on that committee have really been trying to drive home, that we need a multi-pronged approach that's rooted in public health to address violence in Baltimore City.
And Leatrice Gant, we talked to you or Erica Bridgeford, your co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, after each of the ceasefire weekends.
Yes.
They happen four times a year, but once a quarter. But your work continues in between those events and those weekends. You certainly have been a victim yourself of the trauma associated with violence in our city, as has Erica.
Yes.
And you talk to adults, too, all the time about
the time.
Trauma. So it's not just limited to children.
No.
What are you hearing from the families, the mothers, the sisters, the wives, the girlfriends, the boyfriends of people who've been affected by violence?
One of the important things that we try to communicate with just like the public about violence in Baltimore City, and it's a difficult conversation to have with people, that Someone who has been a victim of trauma, someone who has been a victim of abuse, is more likely to abuse and traumatize another person. So while we do not, like, there's nothing worse than celebrating a person because they've committed that kind of act, because some people think that that's what we're doing. But in reality, what we're asking people to do is to humanize the person who has committed this act of violence and to understand that they weren't born this way and that a lot of things led up to their circumstances, their personality, the choices that they made right before they pulled that trigger. So nobody wakes up. Nobody is born being a killer. Society makes killers. Trauma makes killers. Abuse makes killers. And so while we hate losing community members to violence, we understand that on the other side of that, there is a whole nother set of people who are impacted and affected by it because their loved one was the person who traumatized a whole nother set of people. And so approaching, and I love the idea of bringing the conversation back to trauma, listening to people when we go out in the community in between ceasefire weekends and canvas the community. One of the things that it is imperative that we do is engage people and listen to their stories. So this particular ceasefire weekend, we were on Fulton Avenue, and there was a 70-year-old man who was facing eviction. And just thinking about the fact that...
That's about as traumatic as it gets.
Right.
You're 70 years old and all of a sudden you don't have any place to live.
Right. His house is infested with bed bugs. It is... He has rats in his basement. Thinking about stuff like that, and I understand the point of focusing on children. And at the same time, we have adults in our community who are living with real trauma and who have been traumatized their whole lives. And so it's overwhelming sometimes, and the work has to be done. And I appreciate everybody in Baltimore City who is contributing in their own way to try to help to heal our city.
And Breonna Harris, we heard last February about the incident at Douglas High School where you attend school, where an assistant there, a man folks refer to as Coach Marks, was shot by somebody who was angry at him for the treatment, evidently, of a relative of this guy. Put us in that school building the day that that happened and the days that followed that. How did you react to that when you heard about it? How did your friends react about it? React to it? What happened?
Well, when we first heard that there was a shooting going on, we didn't believe it. We thought that, you know, they were joking. And we saw everyone running, like, down the halls, and we were like, okay, maybe this is serious. So we ran into the classroom, and it was like nobody was taking it seriously. I barely took it serious. You know, I told my mom, and she's like, you know, what's going on? Everyone was calling their parents, and it was just crazy because we didn't even know what was going on. You know, we were on lockdown, and nobody was putting into context what happened. And, you know, they released us, and, you know, all the news and police and ambulance was outside. The week following, they sent counselors to school. It didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel genuine at all. It just felt like they just... felt like they had to do something, but it wasn't really the right approach to it. You know, we didn't know those people, and it felt like, you know, we was just leaving the auditorium, and there was a whole bunch of people just staring at you like, oh my gosh, do you need help? And it was like...
Of things did they ask you? What kinds of questions did they pose to you?
It was mainly, do you want to talk? And it's like, no.
Did you?
No. I didn't know them. I didn't, you know, we didn't understand them. They didn't understand us. They didn't understand the climate of the school. So it was just, it was like a circus act, kind of.
Brianna Harris is a rising senior at Frederick Douglass High School. Leatrice Gant is a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365. Christopher Burnett and Zeke Cohen serve on the Baltimore City Council. We're talking about what the city might do to treat and respond to trauma. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll take your calls and comments at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at @TomHallWYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, another edition of Midday Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks of the Maryland Institute College of Art. We're going to talk about the commentary and response to President Trump's verbal assault on Baltimore and cities across the country, as well as his singling out for disparagement Oversight Committee Chairman Elijah Cummings. What has that done to Baltimore's image in the national media? Does it matter? And what has it done to our own image of our city and our aspirations for change? Dr. Sherry Parks joins me, as she does on the first Tuesday of every month, tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, we're talking about how to make our city more responsive to the trauma that afflicts so many of our young people, as well as people of all ages who live in proximity to violence, to blight, and to fear. Leatrice Gant is a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365. They hold ceasefire weekends four times a year, but their work as consolers and witnesses to the trauma caused by violence in our city continues every day. Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen and Christopher Burnett join us as well. They are backing legislation that would put trauma treatment and prevention at the heart of the mission of various city agencies. And Brianna Harris is a rising senior at Douglass High School who, like our other guests, knows firsthand the effects of trauma. We'd like to hear from you if you'd like to be part of our conversation. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Councilman Cohen, Brianna makes a really interesting point. This incident involving a shooting at Douglass High School happens. Counselors are brought in, but Brianna and her classmates don't know those people. And that conversation doesn't just sort of automatically happen. Before you became a counselor, you founded a group called The Intersection. You have experience working with young people. Would your bill help this problem that Brianna has identified in terms of authenticity and credibility with the people who are helping people dealing with trauma?
Yeah, and I think what Brianna said is really important, which is that, you know, at the foundation of supporting someone who's experienced trauma, there needs to be a relationship. This work can't happen in a vacuum. It's not good enough to just send in a therapist or a counselor if that person doesn't understand the context in which they're working and really doesn't understand the young person or adult that they're working with. And so initially when we thought about this, you know, we thought about Baltimore and how this is such a city of neighborhoods and it's a city of people. And so much of the good work that happens here is done through relationships. And I think about the ceasefire movement in particular. And to me, really, that's about how do we all engage in this deeper conversation as a city, whether we're a council person, whether we're a student, whether we're an organizer, that we all need to be part of this conversation. And so to the legislation, really, this is more about how do we get our frontline staff all on the same page? And then how do we as policymakers, agency heads, legislators start to create conditions in which people can thrive? And we're not inadvertently, because I don't think it's intentional, but I see it happen a lot where the city government itself is part of traumatizing communities. Leatrice was just talking about evictions. I think a lot about one of the phenomenons that's come up in these conversations is every couple of years when there's a new head of Rec and Park, often what happens is that the frontline agency staff gets shifted around from rec center to rec center. And again, we know that when someone has deep roots and connection within a community, and then you shuffle them to some other place, that destroys the relationships that they've built. And that's the type of policy decision that we're making without thinking about the impact of either doing that to that staff member who's been rooted in that community, or the children and families that have come to know them. And I've seen that in my own district, and it's time for us as a city to start pushing in the other direction and really thinking about the impact of the policies we make.
And Councilman Burnett, you're not talking necessarily about placing professional counselors in every rec center or professional counselors attached to various city agencies. You're talking about the folks who are already working in these agencies being trained in order to intervene with somebody who's experiencing trauma. That's a tough job. I mean, think of how hard it is to come up to with something to say for somebody who's lost her 95-year-old uncle. I mean, it's just really difficult to talk to people in any situation that involves death and violence in particular. Do you have confidence that the folks who are in these agencies who are not professionally trained as counselors will be able to help?
So I think I don't think the expectation is that, you know, professional staff are suddenly, you know, licensed social workers or have that same skill set. However, I think there needs to be, to the councilman's point, some intentionality in thinking about how the work done or isn't being done could traumatize a community. And I'll go ahead and I don't want to jump too far ahead into what Latrice might add, but I do remember seeing something. It was even on her social media site or Erica Bridgeford's page about visiting the site of a shooting and the site wasn't cleaned, which for me was shocking to read, and I know it had to be shocking to the volunteers and the folks who do that work at Ceasefire to see. And more importantly, what does that actually impact the community and the residents and the folks who walk by that, the kids who walk by that, and that city staff that, you know, was not doing their job the way it's supposed to be, and it has an impact. But to the other side around the rec center piece, you know, often rec staff are the frontline workers that are dealing with trauma on a day-to-day basis. And I'll give an example. Councilman Cohen and I met with several rec directors in my district to just have a listening session around what are the things that they're seeing, what are they dealing with, give us some examples in your work that, you know, you are affected by trauma, that the kids are affected by trauma, and how that plays out in the things that you're doing in the rec center itself. And one of the rec directors in my district described a young man who, in the last year, lost an uncle and a brother to gun violence within months. And no one knew that initially, but he was one of the most difficult kids to deal with at the center. And she was saying how she, you know, it was a challenge for her and the staff, and, you know, she had to talk them off the cliff a few times from, like, banning the kid from the center because he was acting out, he was violent towards other kids. But as she built a relationship with him, realized that he himself had been through a lot and had not had any access to care. His mom had also been through a lot and hadn't had care either. And had figured that, you know, how does kicking this kid out of the center or limiting his access to us, even though we're not social workers, help him along the way, help him deal with that trauma, help him have a safe space to process things. And so she described how she managed to build a relationship with him, how to deal with his behavior a little bit, been through some trainings herself, even has a rocking chair with teddy bears in her office now as a safe space for not only this young man, but any parents or kids that come in that it may have experienced something that they just need a break from and need a place to sit that's therapeutic. And we were seeing this in some other schools in across the city as well, where they're bringing in therapeutic rooms or meditation rooms as a way to have space for young people to clear their thoughts and process their thoughts. And often these young people may not be able to get to a clinic or have insurance. I mean, there's a lot of barriers to care that we know about, and it's a big issue for many Baltimoreans. But I think the intention of this legislation and the intention of pushing this narrative is that while we don't expect them to be social workers on the ground and in every center, there is a lot of room for growth in training frontline staff and rec centers and schools in the police department, you name it, in how to manage trauma more effectively, how to refer people out, how to handle a situation with someone who may be acting out and you may not understand why. Heck, I could use a trauma training, you know, given the type of calls that come into my office and the things that I help people navigate on a day-to-day. It's a lot to process, but ultimately we have to think differently about how we approach this issue in Baltimore.
Baltimore City Councilman Christopher Burnett represents the 8th District. Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen represents the 1st District. We're talking about a piece of legislation they are shepherding through the City Council called the Baltimore City Trauma Responsive Care Act, making Baltimore a trauma responsive city. Our other guests, Leatrice Gant, who's a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, and Brianna Harris, who's a student at Douglas High School here in the city. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page as well. I'm Tom Hall. We got a number of callers. So callers, if you could help us out and keep your comments brief and your questions direct, we'd appreciate it. Let's go first to Debbie in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
I'm an MSW.
That's a Master of Social Work.
Uh-huh. A Master's of Social Work. And in the state of Indiana, I'm an LCSW. And we have learned a lot over the years, starting from 911, that sometimes intervening too soon, as Brianna was describing, these people disjointed, haven't had a chance to process what has happened or to internalize it. So when someone says you want to talk about what? And sometimes we do more damage by intervening too soon.
Yeah, well, thank
and
you,
I
Debbie.
Would,
yeah.
I would propose you have to work on two angles. First, prevention. To have places where people know, whether they're community centers, the schools, churches, whatever, the local deli down the street, where they feel comfortable, where they can go, and they can get positive feedback. And then the second is the treatment part. As you're suggesting, training people who are in those areas that everyone knows are community people.
Thanks, Debbie. We do have a number of calls, so I'm going to go ahead and move on. But I do appreciate that. Very good point. And Leatrice Gant, the timing of talking to someone who's been victimized by trauma for whatever reason really matters a lot. One of the beautiful things that you do with Erica and the folks at Ceasefire is the SAGE ceremony,
yes,
where you're simply acknowledging what's happened. You have a moment of stepping back and being quiet and considering things.
Yeah, sacred space rituals are our response to, or one of the responses to, murder in Baltimore City. When they first started in November 2017, the idea was to go into the space where murder occurred with spiritual tools and healing technology to help to cleanse the space and to help to demonstrate to community that there are people who live in Baltimore City who are willing to come to the space that you live in, that you occupy, to do what we can.
If they're not scared away by
it. Exactly. And to help to heal that space and acknowledge the life of the person who was there, and also to leave love and light in that space. People avoid places where they know where people have been murdered. And so Baltimore has all of these black holes where people just won't travel because they know that murder has occurred in those spaces. And the sacred space rituals are healing not only for the loved ones, but for people in the community, because they come out, we pray, people sing, people speak life into that particular situation, and people are changed by it. You can't come to that kind of thing and witness that kind of thing and not be different somehow. And people thank us, families thank us, community members thank us, because nothing like that has been done in Baltimore City before.
Yeah. And Brianna, Councilman Cohen was purposeful about asking your input and the input of other young people in the city in the forming of this legislation, in the writing of it. You were involved from the very beginning. What was important to you to see in this bill, given your experience as a high school student here in Baltimore?
I think it's important that we start within our community to help heal the community. Too often we have people who don't understand our circumstances come in and try to put their input, but there's people who's within the community that is also willing to help us. And I think it's important that we implement it right then and there so that we already have those relationships so that we can start to heal as a city.
Let's go back to the phones to Christina in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. So my question has to deal with being trauma-informed. So trauma is, of course, defined by the person who has had the experience. So I think that's a starting block in us thinking about what trauma is as opposed to assuming. The other thing is, as Baltimore moves forward and being trauma-informed, how are we going to mitigate the compassion fatigue component? Because what we have to have an understanding of is our first responders are also the people who've also experienced these things and can be desensitized as well.
Thanks for that comment, Christine. Appreciate it. Councilman Cohen, I mean, this bill does seem to address that because the training about helping people with trauma is going to help those people traumatize themselves, the people who are working in the rec centers, et cetera.
Yeah. You know, my colleague, Councilman Burnett, mentioned that we've been holding some listening sessions with frontline agency staff around the city. And one of the interesting things that has come up in pretty much every conversation we've had is the amount of secondhand vicarious traumatization that our staff experience when they're dealing with either young people or adults who are coming in pain, who've lost family members, who've witnessed violence, who've been evicted from their home, that those conversations cumulatively, those interactions and those relationships take a toll and have an impact on staff themselves. And not to mention that many of our agency staff, our workforce themselves, are often experiencing trauma within their own lives. And so what we wanted to be really sensitive to in writing this legislation was that we didn't add to their burden. We didn't make it harder for them to operate. Or
but how
just...
does this not add to their burden, though? I mean, in a practical way, how does it not?
Can I... So I,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. I have actually gone through trauma-informed care training through the Baltimore City Health Department. And what I will say as a person who volunteered to go into community to help to heal community, the tools that you learn from that training are effective. They are... it's a meaningful addition to your life, and it literally changes the way that you approach things. Mm-hmm. So the learning of it, there is actually some healing in learning.
In the learning.
In the learning part of it.
But Councilman Cohen, I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I mean, you do think you can do this without adding this extra burden. Okay, now you're running this rec center, and by the way, you're in charge of, you know, making sure the mental health of all of the kids is okay.
Well, look, this came from not only our students who first issued this call, but staff themselves, you know, and I know as a teacher and as someone who spent the first decade of my professional life working with teenagers, I know that I internalized a lot of their pain as well as my own pain and really could have used some more support, especially when I was in the classroom and really didn't know how to effectively respond. So I do think the training in and of itself is helpful. And I think that, you know, when you write legislation, I think it's really important that you, one, center the community that you're trying to support, but that you also, two, center the people who are going to be charged with implementing it. And so we wanted to be really careful, and we wanted to really, both Councilman Burnett and myself, really listen to folks like Jessica, who's a rec director in his district, or Israel, who's a rec director in mine, about what they needed. And they said really clearly that this legislation is something that we as frontline staff need. And I also think that being a part of the policy process, advocating for it, is healing in and of itself, mm-hmm. and that they are going to be... these trauma responsive champions that we elect from our agencies are going to get to have a hand in reshaping policies and procedures. I think that matters. because a big part of healing trauma is voice and choice. And when people feel like they have a voice and they are being respected and listened to, that goes a really long way.
Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen represents the 1st District. Councilman Christopher Burnett represents the 8th District. Brianna Harris is a student at Douglas High School here in the city. And Leetrice Gant is the co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take some more of your calls and comments at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we are also streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. Before we go to a break, it's Monday, and on Mondays here on Midday, it is our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. We get their names from Ellen Worthing, who has compiled a list of Baltimore homicide victims for 18 years now. We also consult the Baltimore Sun's list of homicides. Victim identifications posted on the Baltimore Police Department's Facebook page as well. So far this year, 200 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. During this past week, 6 people were victims of homicide. 5 of those victims have been identified. They are Markel Jackson, age 24, Dante Samuel, age 27, Johnny Johnson, age 24. Stephen Tasker, age 39. And DeAndre Goines, he was 19 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about how to address the trauma that so many of our residents experience from the violence that occurs all too frequently in our city. My guests today are Brianna Harris. She is a student at Douglas High School, and she has worked with the City Council and others to draft legislation that aims to make Baltimore trauma responsive. Councilman Zeke Cohen is the sponsor of that legislation. Councilman Christopher Burnett chairs the Health Subcommittee, which will be voting on this legislation sometime soon. He is a supporter of the bill along with several of their colleagues on the council. Leetrice Gant supports anybody who needs it, and she organizes events that advance the cause of nonviolence as the co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365, along with Erica Bridgeford. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780. To send us an email, it's midday@wypr.org. To drop us a tweet, it's @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. And you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Councilman Burnett, we have a comment from Jason on Facebook who says it's of utmost importance that the folks who seek services with this task force feel accepted. They need to feel that they are viewed as a person rather than a number. This will require a great deal of training. So how much are you willing to give to this program, and will sacrifices in other areas need to be made? Is there a price tag on this legislation, Mr. Burnett?
So I would have to defer to Councilman Cohen on sort of the long-term, his long-term vision for this. Currently, as written, there aren't additional resources set aside to it. That's one of the challenges that we currently have as members of the City Council. We can't appropriate funds, so we are reliant on negotiations with the mayor's office to do that, unless there's a charter amendment. So it's not something that we can do at this point. However, I want to go back to something that Councilman Cohen mentioned earlier, that on our listening tours with staff in rec centers, rec directors, they were eager for this. So it'll be a monumental task to spread this across many agencies. But ultimately, these folks are dealing with traumatic people or people who've experienced trauma anyway on a day-to-day basis. And so from their perspective, adding to their tool, their skill set in how to manage situations that they're already dealing with can only better improve both their experience in working in city government and the people that they're trying to help.
And Z-Cone, I mean, the legislation also calls for various departments and agencies to rewrite procedures and policies that can prevent some of the harm that's happening. What do you mean by that? What does that look like to you?
Sure. So, you know, just to my colleague's previous point, ultimately, we're working with our fiscal analyst, and there will be some fiscal note to this bill. But, you know, you think about how much money our city is currently spending reacting to violence, whether that's through the police department, the state's attorney, prison. Baltimore has, and I think our country has, this obsession with punishment and with a punitive approach to problem solving, which if punishment, if policing was the answer, we'd be the safest city in America. And guess what? We're not. And so what we're arguing through this legislation is that we need a much greater sense of urgency in preventing violence, in preventing homicide and abuse and neglect and all of these things, which we know ultimately drag down our city, that we can't just keep reacting and expecting a different result. And so for me, given the really large amount of money that we're spending on our police department, I actually think we should spend more on our health department, on our recs and parks, on our libraries, on those agencies that are doing the work on the front lines, engaging with our families and children, that they need the same kind of support that we've often given on the back end. In terms of rewriting policies and procedures, the idea here is that we would have both a high-level person, like a director or an assistant director, but also someone who's really a frontline staff member, working together with our health department, working together with community to come up with some ideas to reduce harm. So I think about our libraries and how that physical space could be transformed into places of healing. We have a wonderful director of the Enoch Pratt right now, Heidi Daniels, who really gets it and who really understands that in the 21st century, a library is not just a place for people to come get books. It is a community center. It is a space for healing. And so what would it look like if we, through the policies and procedures at the Enoch Pratt, really created space for healing? We set aside a room for people to go when they need a moment. You know, in the Southeast branch, we see Zumba, we see meditation happening. But that's the type of policy and procedure change that I would love to see each of our agencies embark on to try to heal and help and reduce harm across our city.
Brianna, here's a question for you from Daniel on Twitter. And this is indicative of a lot of comments that we get here with the Midday community, which I'm very proud of and happy about. Daniel says, "What can ordinary citizens like me do to help you and your fellow students? There are caring individuals out here who want to help our students feel safe." What would you recommend to folks who aren't in high school anymore, or don't even have kids in high school anymore? Well, what can they do to help?
I think, you know, just getting together in the community. I think to a really good point of Latrice, the spiritual aspect of healing, I think that's really important. You know, getting together and taking moments to reflect on all that has been going on in our city and also planning ways to go forward in our city. I feel like it's important for us to reflect on the past so that we can know where we're going in the future.
Let's go to the phones excuse me. I guess we were going to go to Sue. She's not online, but she says about teachers, the frontline defenders in our schools are teachers. Does this bill specifically, Zeke Cohen, work to support teachers? As I understand it, there are about 200 social workers and about 140 school psychologists currently in the school system. That comes down to like one counselor per almost 400 kids. So that's a lot of kids, you know, per person. But obviously, rec centers and schools are going to be two of the biggest dimensions of this frontline approach.
Yeah, so, and it's funny you ask, I'm actually headed after this to North Ave to go speak to some folks over there about what this would look like within our school system. Unfortunately, in my mind, the school system, Baltimore City Public Schools, is actually a state agency. And so when we legislate...
Like the police department.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right. So
no one's ever been able to explain all of that to me, and we ain't gonna fix that. Now, I do want to go to the phones again to Jack in Wyman Park. You've been very patient, sir. Thank you for calling.
This is Jack Boyson, president of the Wyman Park Community Association. I'd like to add a third dimension to the first-line responders to trauma in the city of Baltimore, and that is to make it neighborhood-based, working through neighborhood associations to build a cadre of individuals who can serve as mental health first aid responders and also conflict resolution responders throughout the city. There's something like 300 neighborhoods, and if we had responders in each of those neighborhoods, we'd be closer to the need.
All right, thanks for that comment, Jack. I appreciate it. And then, Leatrice, this weekend as part of the ceasefire events included the opening of a Safe Streets location up on York Road. Tell us about that.
So Baltimore Community Mediation Center and Safe Streets partnered to host a Family Fun Day to open the new Safe Streets Woodburn McCabe site. They had a dunk booth. They had food. They had music. People were able to meet the violence interrupters that are in the program in that particular location. It was a lot of community and relationship building. So we were there for 6 hours. People were able to have conversations, ask questions, tour the space so they could see what the space looks like. And I'm really excited about what Safe Streets has done and what they're going to be able to do in that particular community.
And Councilman Burnett, when it comes to, you know, a legislative remedy for something like this, what if this legislation, because it does, at the moment doesn't have a price tag associated with it, you know, even if it is sort of more aspirational than anything else, if it changes the perspective of how people are approaching the problem of violence, is this an effort to sort of change the culture of city government and how city government attempts to confront these issues?
I think you said it for me. We have to have a culture shift in many aspects of city government, but primarily how we address violence in Baltimore will require an all-hands-on-deck approach. Every agency can play a part in that, whether it's making sure our streets are clean, alleys are clean, houses mowed and boarded. And, I mean, I share this story a lot with constituents. The only map I have posted up in my office is one where we have listed all the vacant properties in my district. And I have that one up because I also know that that's where I'm going to have the most violence, where there may be the most prevalence of lead paint, of trauma. I mean, you name it, those things are concentrated in these same areas.
It's not disconnected.
And so
yeah,
it requires all of our agencies to have that perspective when approaching their work.
Christopher Burnett is on the Baltimore City Council along with Zeke Cohen. He represents the 8th District. Mr. Cohen represents the 1st District. Leatrice Gant is a co-founder of Baltimore Ceasefire 365 with Erica Bridgeford, and Brianna Harris is a member of the class of 2020 at Frederick Douglass High School. Best of luck to you, Brianna.
Thank you so much.
You got college in the future. What's up for you next year?
well, I'm looking
real
at
quick because I'm running out of time.
Chapel Hill in North Carolina.
God bless. Well, fingers crossed for you. We have a link to a copy of Councilman Cohen's bill on our website, wipr.org/midday. And thanks to all of you
for the work you're doing and for being here.
Thanks
for having me.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, a little navel gazing for residents of Baltimore City and those around our state who care about our community. In light of President Trump's continuing criticism and disparagement of our city and other urban areas, how do we see our city? What changes would you like to see in Baltimore, and what are we reluctant to change. It's all too easy to simply say we need less crime, but how do we get there? Why is the murder rate seemingly so intractable? How can we achieve the kind of cultural change that will lead to a safer, more prosperous place for all of us who live here? Dr. Sherry Parks joins me for the Midday Culture Connections. We want to thank the DIZ for providing lunch today. They're located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The DIZ is open for lunch and dinner, with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. Stay tuned. Here and Now is coming up next after the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.